This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and joining us this morning is a very wonderful guest. She is Dr. Tanya Grimble. She is the CEO and founder of Stem It Up Sports. In fact, Dr. Grimble, the last time I talked to you, you joined us live from Australia. How you been doing this morning?
I've been doing great. I'm surprised you remember that. But yeah, we were in Australia and it was a really great opportunity to provide programming to that country. So we were excited.
I was excited to have you, and especially considering we're talking about STEM and we're talking about kids. And again, let me give you some more props too. You're also a contributor to Forbes magazine on raising happy and confident children in a STEM-driven world. So we're talking about kids. We're talking about STEM. Tell all the parents who aren't familiar, or put it like this, people who are not parents, who don't have kids in elementary or middle school, or not familiar with STEM, tell them what STEM stands for and what the research really is.
So STEM is the acronym of science, technology, engineering, and math. Mm-hmm. With those four components, there's so many things that we do that involve all four of those components. And so when you start thinking about the technology and the advancement that we're evolving in for science, engineering, these components kind of go hand in hand. You've got technology that goes in hand in hand with engineering, and there's math involved in it. So all of these components have some sort of, collaboration and cross curriculum. And so you're really just seeing this kind of acronym really come to life with some of the programming that we're doing with students in schools and colleges, universities, and across all of the actual sectors with stakeholders.
And, you know, as people are joining us, they're all curious about technology in particular, especially with AI and ChatGPT and all the different things that technology is like cohabiting our worlds together. Robots, all kinds of things, even delivery services using drones and things. I mean, everything is like so tech nowadays. It's almost like that TV show, The Jetsons, from back in the day. With that being said, there's always people who are just now listening and tuning in who are wondering, how long has STEM been available for students, and at what ages are these programs available to kids?
Okay, so here's a fun fact. STEM's been around for centuries, right? Even all the way back in slave times when we were engineers and we created things to make jobs easier when we were out in the fields. And so you can trace it all the way back to, you know, before Christ, right? So there's all types of engineering that's happened. There's all types of science that's happened, and it continues to happen. What's evolving is the technology field and how it's being delivered and how we're using it, right? Because every, you know, if you go back, you know, some centuries or, you know, even just a decade, when we didn't really use cell phones the way we're using them now, they look different. They feel different. They allow you to do different things. And as it evolved, it just became easier and easier to advance into other areas of technology. And so we're starting to see STEM really kind of cross collaborate into a lot of our spaces. So when you're at the drive-through, sometimes the actual person talking to you is an AI generated voice that is taking order.
Yes. Right? Oh, yeah. No, so, slow down. You speaking our language now. So in other words, you pull up to the drive-through window, and this voice is talking to you, and then right after it welcomes you and asks you a couple of things, then the other person starts talking.
That's right. And basically what they're trying to do is make work efficient for employees so that they can focus on your order more than focusing on getting your order wrong when they may not understand what you say. So when you're feeding that information into the kiosk, when it asks you questions, then it can actually take your voice and generate exactly what you're saying, rather than if you have, you know, a dialect that just kind of, you know, hinders your voice, then it'll translate that for you so that they can see it on the other side and make sure that they get your order correctly. It's just about helping them work efficiently rather than they're working, you know, working 10 times harder, asking you, what's your order? That kind of thing. Uh-huh. So we're just getting better with how we're doing programming and how we're doing business. It's not anything we should fear, we should embrace.
Yes, I like the way you talked about it using an example of a cell phone, because when cell phones first came around, again, everybody used to have a telephone at the house or had a telephone, and maybe they had it in the car, you had a car phone. But then, like you said, once the cell phone was around, it was just basic. You just made phone calls. And now everyone's cell phone is their life. It's like they can do FaceTime. They can visit with people. They can make appointments. They've got a calendar on it. They've got a number of apps. You can watch television. Your cell phone basically is your life. And that was just basically the evolution of one particular part of technology, right?
Right. I mean, if you think about it, when we had landline phones, the way our phone moved around our house was through this long cord that we circulated around the house that got us from one area to the next, right?
And had to untangle it.
Yeah, you had to untangle it, or it was choking people in the hallways.
Right.
You know, it was everywhere. And so I don't know one person that has a landline anymore in my family, or even in people that I've associated with, because their cell phone is just so much easier and it can actually leave their homes, right? So you can, the objective of the cell phone was so that you didn't miss a call. If you were at home, you could have it with you, right? Mm-hmm. And now you're always, you know, capturing phone calls. And so, you know, I imagine when Steve Jobs decided to make the iPhone, his thought was, okay, how can we even connect them to that? They don't miss news. They don't miss TV. They don't miss, mm-hmm. you know, things that are happening in the world because they're not at their home. Right. And so they've come up with all kinds of ways to help us get better at how we work and how we evolve. But we don't realize how much of a lifeline it becomes to us when we are, especially when it comes to this point where we lose our phone. Like, we're like, oh my gosh,
oh my
goodness.
Phone. Yeah. People lose their minds.
Real. Yes. It becomes real important to you at that point. You really go searching for it.
It becomes an amazing important thing. I didn't even bring up the photography part. I mean, people use their phones not only to take pictures and keep pictures of things and screenshots and things like that, but there are actual big time photographers that use their cell phone for pictures. And there are also big time filmmakers who actually use cell phones for their videos. I mean, the phones are, talk about, you know, the evolution of some technology, the phone and the cell phone and what you use to do with it. It's just absolutely amazing. And this is just part of what STEM is all about. In other words, some of the kids today working in the STEM programs, I mean, in the next 10 years, who knows what they'll be working on?
Exactly. I mean, it just changes so much that from one you know, next thing to the next, you can really see the Jetsons coming to life. I mean, think about with FaceTime, they had a whole screen on the Jetsons that showed, you know, when phone calls were being made and you could see each other. And so now we're actually doing that.
So
we're going to probably have robots that help us clean our homes.
Oh, yeah.
Like we do the little small robots. But yeah, you know, but we'll have an actual Rosie. You just never know the things that we're going to come up with. But we definitely need to educate our youth now so that they understand what's to come and they need to be prepared. And computer science skill sets are important, not just for them, but also for adults. So yes, we've got a lot of work that we're doing, but we need a lot of people that understand how to do it.
Exactly. Which leads to the big event coming April the 5th in Mansfield. We're talking about STEMCOM. Can you talk about STEMCOM 2025 and what is going to happen? Because I know that the next generation of young STEM leaders and educators are all going to be getting together, and they're going to be, put it like this, I don't want to say you guys are going to be plotting things up, but it sounds like everybody's going to be learning a whole lot more. And I don't want to say they're going to be vibing, but they're going to be on a whole different level.
Yes. STEMCON is really a STEM awareness campaign that helps those in the community understand what STEM is. A lot of the times we see this acronym and we just break it up into its pieces: science, technology, engineering, and math. But we don't understand how all of these pieces come together, all these core components come together, and how we're using them in everything that we do. For an example, we have smart homes that have, you know, the actual, AC units that are controlled by a lot of our apps and phones, but then they actually read the temperature in some of the homes to say, okay, this is the regulated temperature it should be at. You know?
Yeah.
So we really have to think about, how STEM is really evolving so that we can be able to express to the community how they're seeing themselves in it. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I didn't know until just recently, that city of Mansfield has the number one robotic surgeons that are in Texas, right?
What?
I didn't know that until I just met with one of the presidents at the hospital, and he explained that a lot of their surgeries are done, some of their surgeries that are planned are you with a robotic arm, right? Mm-hmm. And so it limits the scar tissue, it minimizes the actual, you know, recovery time. It's supposed to be less evasive. And so that's kind
and
of
And I bet it's very accurate too. I bet it's very accurate.
Yes. And he explains, how they worked really closely with the engineers to help them understand how to code the robot to do all of these different things while in surgery, and how to, it's just fascinating with how they did that. And so when we talk about STEMCON, we really want to introduce these things to the community so that they understand how STEM is working within everything that they do or they're involved in, on a regular basis.
So are the students who are participating and some of the parents or even some seniors who will be there will have the opportunity to like experiment and try some things out there?
Yeah, there'll actually be some vendors that they could actually go, go to their booths and, learn about different things in STEM, maybe programs that are in the area that are doing STEM, because a lot of times, if you're a homeschool student, you may not have access to what schools have. And so you might need to be introduced to some of these resources. The other thing is there's a professional development track that allows teachers to kind of go in and learn about all the different, advancements that are happening with equipment that they can use in their classrooms. I'm really excited and really hope that one of the UTD presenters can attend to talk about their how to extract DNA from zebrafish, which I thought was fascinating, and that they're using zebrafish right now because they're the closest to a human embryo,
right?
To extract DNA from a zebra to hopefully help them find a cure for cancer. But here's the really great part about this. You definitely want to offer an opportunity for them to learn how this process works. Mm-hmm. And most of these students can breed their own zebrafish and actually go through that process. And that's kind of what these people are professional development is going to be teaching teachers how to do this so that they can introduce this in their classrooms.
This is absolutely amazing, because usually when you hear about, medical technology or medical breakthroughs, they're usually using like rats. And then to hear zebrafish, yeah, it's like, whoa, okay, this next level.
Yes. Yes, it is. And to be able to teach kids at a young age what that looks like, and that they become the next scientist that helps us, cure cancer or all these different types of diseases or any type of, illnesses that we encounter. This is a really great start for them in a classroom setting. And I can see teachers really engaging their kids this way. So we really hope that they come to our professional development so that they can be a part of these sessions and learn how they can introduce these things to their classroom.
So let's talk a little bit about the history or the evolution of STEMCon. How long has it been around, and has it ever been in Mansfield before?
So there has been conferences everywhere that are offered STEM conferences that are offered to teachers, but I've never been to one that's offered to the community and just open to anyone to come, including kids, besides the science fair that they, DISD might have, or any of the other school districts may have for their school districts. But what we want to do is we're doing something a little different. STEMCon is a conference, and it's a STEM awareness campaign that just allows individuals to understand all the advancement of STEM. We're going to have a whole segment, which I'm happy to say you'll be a part of.
Yes.
That is an AI demonstration that allows the audience to engage in it live, right? So we may bring some people up and have them do some things on all these different types of AI platforms so that they can kind of see and show the crowd, how simple they are, and how it's not to be feared, how you can use it for a lot of your everyday things, including how kids could use it in their homework area, but it's not using it to do their homework. It's using it to check their homework, right? It's about that responsibility. And so we hope to engage them in that way. So then they can kind of learn a little bit more about how to implement these tools on an actual responsible basis. It's called digital citizenship, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're going to try to engage in.
I love this. And again, I'm looking forward to April the 5th. That's a Saturday in Mansfield for STEMCon 2025. Yes. And Dr. Grimble, I was just thinking about this, ChatGPT, because you mentioned about how there's going to be ways that they can help grade the students' work or see how they did, not do it for them. Tell us about how teachers, educators, or parents can harness ChatGPT with their students who are using it, or how can you rightly use it and not fear it?
So ChatGPT is not GPT.
Yes, it's a tongue twister, especially with GPS helping you get to your with GPS trying to get you where you're trying to go. It's a tongue twister.
It does, but it is an actual platform and software that's used for many things. Mm-hmm. But what we showcase to teachers are all the different AI softwares that are just specific for school, right? Because while that's a really great platform with ChatGPT, it's not the only one and not the best suggestion for teachers. And when they're doing like lesson plans or they're producing quizzes, there's other platforms that are free that are set up just for them. And we hope to give them that feedback on those actual platforms in our PD as well. When they come to see this session, they're going to learn basic things about ChatGPT that they didn't know they needed to do to kind of train it so that it understands what your language is and how
harness it for your interests. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. And so we're going to give them, an opportunity to kind of, understand what they're looking for, how to have it do research for you, how to have it, create charts and things like that for you. So then that way you can kind of get some of your work done faster. And it doesn't mean that it's the final product. You still need to go through it and make sure it fits what you're trying to do. But this should be a tool that everyone should be able to use, from the boardroom to entrepreneurs to students just understanding topics or just doing just basic research. They can be able to do that with ChatGPT. So we're hoping that we give a really good demonstration through a group that just can come up there and just, you know, ask it things, and then we show the crowd how that's done.
I love all of this. In fact, I want to encourage all kinds of people to show up to STEMCOM 2025. And the reason why is it's not just for kids, because parents, grandparents, seniors, people who are just curious about technology. I remember, you know, my father in particular, and I know your dad too, was always about being ahead of the curve and knowing the latest and the greatest, this, being on top of that. They have the latest phone, they have the latest stereo, they have the latest, you know, earphones. I mean, you just name it. They had the next step. They were ahead of the curve. They had the next technology. So I would like to see anybody who's just saying, okay, my kids are not my tech support, I want to know all about this myself. Is that a reason to show up?
Yes. Because it's for everyone. We want, again, this is about STEM awareness. And a lot of times people don't understand. I have taught seniors how to use their phones. I've taught them how to, you know, understand what a QR code is. Like, there's just a lot of things that they can learn about their devices that they have in their home. Even, you know, just kind of understanding how, you know, STEM is embedded in a lot of our, you know, law enforcement and how they use it to, you know, help us and keep us safe. You know, they were using a lot of that in California when they were trying to spot where the fires were located and kind of helping people understand where to go. They also used these drones to help with trafficking, right? So as people were evacuating, the drones could provide an actual, you know, route to the fastest route to get out for most of those families based on what they see aerial. So to understand how we're using technology is just one piece of it. We don't always understand how it's being embedded in everything that we're doing, how all these companies are using it in ways to help them be more efficient.
Exactly. And that's the bottom line: efficiency and productivity. Let's talk a little bit about, because there's so many different ways we could talk about STEM, but I'm really curious about on the fact that you wanted to, when you first started up STEM It Up Sports, to have kids and adults embrace it in the sports world, because there's so many people who are gamers as well. Can you talk about how you've tied some STEM into gaming or STEM into sports?
Yes. So basically what I wanted to do was recognize STEM as a sport, because there's the kid out there that doesn't play an analog sport or physical sport. And so they want to do a tech sport, and we want to recognize that. Right. And so I paired up with the Sphero, which is an actual company that makes robots. They were also the company that made the robots for Star Wars a while back. And so their product is very quality driven. I love the way it's easy to teach. You can do block code, but then you can turn around and do JavaScript. It's just a really great platform to teach kids, especially new and beginners, right? And so we partnered up to manage their competitions, their Sphero Global Challenge competitions that's presented by STEM It Up Sports. And during their season, we host all of their, we're responsible for all their virtual and their in-person competitions that they happen across the world, that allows them to, each kid to actually do up to 5 missions that they have to complete using the robots that they code throughout those missions. And then they get scored on, right? And there's a presentation at the end, and an interview that they have to do. And all of these things really do a couple of things. We don't concentrate always on scoring them on the actual, you know, finished product. We also make sure that it's about the effort, because the effort is the biggest part of it. Then we turn around and we push them to be better public speakers, because they have to do an actual interview process. And this is just explaining their code. All of these things are the things you're going to need for when you go into the career field, especially if you're putting together a project or you're putting together an actual presentation. You need to have these skills so that you can be able to present those to your superiors or your leadership. And so we're really trying to prepare these kids for what's to come and what they're going to do when they get into these careers, because STEM is so much about problem solving,
yes,
evaluating your project and then presenting it. And so it just keeps recycling itself, mm-hmm, right? That's what the competition is really all about, and why I push so much for tech to be a sport.
Tech is a sport because, again, you got to keep up with it. It's always evolving, and it's very engaging. And those who are competitive, it actually kind of solves some of that, or it makes you feel good about yourself because, yes, I got it. I came up with this solution. Or guess what? I was able to get this thing to turn into that thing, or get this robot to do that. I can see where people can be very, very competitive, and it satisfies that need or that urge.
Yes, absolutely. You'd be surprised at how the kids are really focused when they're in competition mode.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing to really watch. It's the same kind of focus that they would be if they were in, you know, a soccer or football,
right,
or baseball, any of those other sports. It's the same type of sport. And it's just different because they're doing a lot more, maybe doing a lot of math involved, or there's a lot of, you know, just basic coding involved, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes they've got to, you know, in the competition, they've got to change up right there on the spot their code to fix it, to do, you know, more things. So we are excited, and we're very proud of the students that participate in our competition. This past year, we actually broke a record, or have set a new record, of having over 474 teams registered across the world for our competition. And so that's big.
What are some of the age ranges of some of the teams of those who are participating in STEM It Up Sports? Because I can imagine, but then I'm probably underestimating it.
Yeah, we range from kindergarten to middle school.
Wow.
And so that's they compete. I think when you're in middle school, you're required to have all five of your missions completed. But your upper elementary and early elementary students, they are required to have three of their missions completed for the state for a final competition.
It's so wild that you bring up all this, because, again, it's way of reaching kids and having them be in this day and age of technology, be on top of things and not left behind. And I would tell everybody once again how you decided to come up with this entire thing, because I'm so impressed with STEM It Up Sports, first of all. And then again, we'll talk some more about STEMCon 2025.
So I originally came up with STEM It Up Sports. It was not for younger kids. It was actually for senior citizens.
Right.
Because I wanted them to, my father who had a stroke, and one thing that I saw that was really helping him communicate and do really well in his therapy was technology. And so I felt like, okay, to decrease the chances of Alzheimer's and dementia, they're always saying, you know, implement technology, and they only meant that by their cell phones or a computer or a tablet. And so I just wanted to take it a little further and introduce robotics to that mix. And so that became a huge hit with our seniors. I mean, our oldest participant was 101. And so what was really great was to watch them engage in something that they never thought they would see because in their lifetime, because they didn't have robots back then, right? They didn't have tablets back then. So, of course, that became popular. And then that's when I knew, okay, we needed to do STEM It Up Sports, because we definitely know that kids will adapt really well to robotics. But what the unexpected outcome I didn't know was the generational gap that would bridge with kids doing robotics with their grandparents or their great grandparents. That was something I didn't foresee that would be an outcome. So that was a great.
That turned into a bonding opportunity. Bonding.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it really is. And so that's what I love to see, because now across generations, we can relate on something that that's really, really cool. And it'd be about coding, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so just doing this just said, you know, we needed more computer science skills in the Texas area to be introduced to many kids and many kids that don't have access. And so that's what STEM It Up Sports is. We're about partnering with locals and organizations to offer an actual access to computer science skills. Texas is ranked at the 54th percentile for computer science standards. And so we need to improve in that because we've got all these STEM careers that are open and no one can take them because they don't understand how to do coding. And so we need to start with, you know, teaching our generation and getting them ready for what's to come when it comes to computer science standards.
Exactly. That's why it's a great opportunity in April for STEMCom 2025. Can you tell people more about it, where they can find more information about it, and how that anybody is accessible to anybody?
Yes. Let me tell you what we're looking for, Chris. We're looking for, if you are a STEM organization or you provide STEM programming or any type of services, or you sell STEM equipment, we'd love for you to come and be a vendor at our event and just showcase what you do and showcase what you sell, what you're about in the community so that more parents can understand all the resources that are out there. I love that I'm, you know, the CEO of STEM It Up Sports, but I can't service everyone. And I want to make sure that we spread this around so that more families have access to STEM programming. The other thing for this is, if you are a food vendor, we'd love to have you come through like a food truck, because we want to be able to feed our actual community while they're going through this process. So please come and sign up for that. And also, if you just want to know about, if you're a teacher or a homeschool teacher, and you're just curious and you want to go to some professional development classes, we're teaching robotics, we're teaching semiconductors, a course on engineering. We have some AI classes that we're doing that are just focused on how to integrate AI into your daily schedules for teachers. Then we're trying to offer the Zebra DNA professional development, which would be exciting. I have fingers crossed that they will jump on board and come and do the actual session. Mm-hmm. And then we have a game jam. I don't know if you know about this one, Chris. This is a actual competition where kids who know how to design a video game can actually enter a contest and possibly win $1,000 prize in their contest. Awesome. And they actually design their video game and present it at the competition.
That is absolutely awesome, because you never know.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Different games that keep coming out and evolving. Yours might be the next one, right?
Exactly. So we're pushing kids to come and join that. We'll also have a whole esports wing for kids to also play tournaments, mm-hmm. and get all types of little prizes. It's also sponsored by our sponsor, Avid Products. They make our headsets. They make the headsets that we use. And then the last but not least, there is the panel discussions that we're offering. And so we've got some really great experts that are coming through to talk about how, you know, STEM is integrated in our lives. And then we have an AI session that just does an AI demo, you know, kind of a session. And so we just want you guys to come. It's a little bit of something for everybody at this STEMCon. And it's all day for a reason. You can come in the morning, then you leave and go and do some other things and you're good. Or you can come in the afternoon and you stay, you stick around to see the drone show at the end of the event. So we're excited to bring this to the first time in Mansfield. And hopefully everyone will want to see this happening every year and we can make this an annual thing.
I love it. The middle of the Metroplex again. What date and where in Mansfield?
So it's going to be Saturday, April 5th at the Mansfield ISD Performing Arts Center.
That's right off of, is that right off of 287 and Debbie Lane?
Yes. Yes, it is. 287 and Debbie Lane. And it's going to start around that 10 o'clock time so that, you know, it's like a kickoff. You want to get there early so you can get, you know, your freebies. We've got some light ones and things that we're going to be, you know, giving everyone when they come into the session just to kick it off. But definitely we'd love to have anyone that wants to come. And you can go to the website. It's stemitupsports.com/stemcon. And so you can definitely find out more information there on the website.
She is Dr. Tanja Gribble. She is the CEO and founder of Stem It Up Sports. Looking forward to StemCon. Almost said STEM.com. StemCon at 20. STEMCOM 2025. Dr. Gribble, thanks again for joining us. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
Joining us today is Dr. Pramila Banwaite. She's the Vice President of Clinical Programs, United Healthcare Vision, talking about the rise in diabetes amongst our young population and the ways that our kids can protect themselves from facing vision loss. Dr. Banwaite, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me today.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here, because the number one thing is this. We want to make sure our kids are taken care of. And I guess when I thought about diabetes, I never really thought about eyesight and vision. Can you kind of connect those dots for me?
Yes. I think what may be helpful is to maybe go back and start with what is diabetes, if that sounds good. And
yeah. Then
yeah, definitely connect it to the eyes and other how it affects the body overall.
Mm-hmm.
But for your listeners and for everyone here, you know, diabetes is a chronic disease that affects our body when blood sugar levels are too high for our body to manage. And so when we typically get sugar in our body is typically able to manage it by converting it into energy so our body can process it. And it uses a hormone called insulin.
Mm-hmm.
However, when you have diabetes, and there's two types of diabetes that I'll quickly go over to because that's important, especially when it relates to juvenile onset of diabetes. There's type 1 diabetes where it's more familial. So it runs in the family, it's genetic. And so type 1 diabetes typically is something where the organ, the pancreas in your body, just is not functioning well. And because of that, it doesn't produce that insulin to convert the sugar into the energy that the body needs. Type 2 is acquired, meaning it's something that's brought on later in life or whatnot due to lifestyle choices, mm-hmm. such as not eating healthy foods or not having an active lifestyle, right? Where you're
right.
You know, on the go, you know, you're not just sedentary. And so there's those two types, but in both cases, there's not the way for insulin to really convert that sugar into the energy the body needs. And when that happens, there's a lot of damage that happens within the body from all the sugar circulating everywhere. And it really affects the blood vessels. It can start causing leakage and bleeding of those blood vessels. And it typically targets the smallest, most delicate blood vessels to begin with. And you can imagine that some of those smaller blood vessels happen to live in the eye as well, in the back of the eye on a surface called the retina. And that's where we really get our best vision and how we can see clear. So if there's damage happening to those blood vessels, you can imagine the bleeding, the inflammation, and the leaking mm-hmm. start to really get in the way of how well we see. And it starts to really impede on having good vision, blurred vision, you know, total blockage of vision, blind spots, things like that. And that's definitely when diabetes starts to affect the eyes in more severe stages.
You know what? I'm so glad we're talking about diabetes, because it actually runs in my family. and I'm afraid of diabetes. So let me explain what my fear is. I'm really not afraid of things, but a surprise diabetes story made me totally aware of staying healthy and being in shape, because my father got diabetes at the age of 37. I was a young kid, and my father, I think, I want to say the last year or two before he got diabetes, he had just gotten out of shape. I mean, he just started eating everything you can think of. I mean, he just totally just got himself fat. He became a little bit obese, and he got rushed to the hospital. And while he was at the hospital, a priest came in and pronounced him dead. That's how far gone he was. And my mom rushed out there, the whole nine yards. They were able to save him. And back in those days, you just had to eat right. But there weren't like a lot of things where people were thinking about, oh, how do you eat right? So he had to really stay on top of his game. But he was that kind of a person where he's like, okay, I'm on a mission now. I'm going to be able to eat right. He's alive and healthy to this day. He is in his 80s, and he has been taking insulin shots. First of all, he got off of the insulin because he was eating so properly. And then he said, oh, wait a minute, I would like to have certain kind of desserts. So he'd rather take insulin shots. And that scared the I don't know what out of me. I'm talking about the fact that he went to the hospital and they said, well, it could be type 1. It could be type 2. And then it could be type 1 because there is some diabetes in our family. And I was like, well, it's not going to get me. And to this day, I don't have diabetes, but I'm very careful about becoming obese or sedentary, as you mentioned, where it could come and get you. Is that not a crazy story?
Yeah, crazy, but unfortunately very common,
yes,
right, in a lot of families in this country. And, you know, I think, thank you for sharing that story. And unfortunately, like I said, it's not uncommon. And decades ago, like you said, when you were a young child and this happened, yeah, 37, 38 years old for your father, that was considered young,
mm-hmm,
to see diabetes in an individual. And if you can imagine, progress to today, and we're actually seeing that the initial diagnosis of diabetes is occurring at a lot younger ages. And so that's what this talk is about, is that it's actually occurring in children. And again, we're not talking about type 1 in this case, but it's type 2, the type,
right,
that's acquired due to lifestyle changes. So when we're seeing the type 2 happening in children who are 10, 11, 12 years old, you can imagine that there's been so much just in those initial 10 years of life. There's just been a lot of unhealthy lifestyle choices that have been occurring for that child, for them to develop diabetes that young, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's such an important topic for us to speak on today. And I'm really, again, glad that you shared your story, because it just highlights just how important it is and, you know, what we're seeing today.
I promise you, my father is like a walking encyclopedia about what you need to do if you have diabetes to still be alive. He's in his 30s. He's now in his 80s, and he's been taking an insulin shot every day, and he's always checking his levels and all these different things. And so, like I said, I was kind of curious about, you know, with kids and diabetes with eye disease. What are some diabetes related eye diseases?
Yeah, so there's a couple different things that can occur to the eyes, you know, and kind of medical terminology. I don't want to kind of get people wrapped up in that terminology, mm-hmm, but in so many words, diabetic retinopathy is the term for it. And there's another condition called diabetic macular edema, but both conditions really refer to the fact that diabetes is damaging the eyes. And that's because the high blood sugar levels are just coursing through the body and damaging the blood vessels, and therefore causing eye-related issues such as, you know, blindness, blurred vision, loss of various parts of your vision,
mm-hmm,
just because of all the inflammation happening from that.
And this is type 2 diabetes, when like it sneaks up on you and like, oh my goodness, I have not been taking care of myself. That's what usually kind of causes this?
Yeah, I mean, this can affect both individuals with both type 1 and type 2 diabetes, but you're right, you know, folks that have type 2 diabetes, it kind of does sneak up on them. They may not be aware of it. And then all of a sudden they're experiencing, you know, kind of systemic symptoms in relation to it. And, you know, when it comes to symptoms with the eyes, all the things I'm talking about, when I'm talking about blindness and loss of vision and all that, those symptoms really are occurring at much severe stages mm-hmm. of diabetic retinopathy. So it's not something that you're going to see in the first 5 or 10 years, even sometimes, but, you know, after that. But it just makes it all the more important that when someone is first diagnosed with diabetes, whether it's type 1 or type 2, that they go in and they get an eye exam. For type 2 in particular, it's hard to sometimes know how long an individual has had diabetes for before they finally get diagnosed, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so they may have had it for 5 or so years already, which makes it even more important for them to see an eye doctor as soon as they can so they can check out the health of the back of the eyes and make sure there's no damage starting to occur already.
Okay, so this is not just a regular eye exam, it's a dilated eye exam. Could you tell us the differences?
Yeah, and a dilated eye exam is something that most anybody who goes to visit an eye doctor will be able to get done. It's like kind of the gold standard, what we expect for a comprehensive eye exam, but involves the use of some drops that go in the eye, which opens up the pupils, the black portion of our eye. It opens it up like a big window, mm-hmm. and it allows the doctor to look at the back and kind of check the status and the health of the retina and the blood vessels in the back of the eye, as well as the nerves and other areas. And it's a great way to look inside the body without having to invasively do anything to the body, okay. right? To cut it open or anything. So it's a great way to look at the status of the whole body by looking into the back of the eyes. So anyone should, you know, go in and get a comprehensive dilated eye exam if they haven't done so for some time. But for obviously for those with diabetes, it's even more important to make sure that there's not that damage starting to occur in the back of the eyes.
Okay. So let's say you've got it. A sister or brother or child that has diabetes. They're young. They're under the age of 20 or 18. What is recommended for young kids with diabetes to have their first dilated eye exam? When should they do that? As soon as possible or as they're a certain age?
Yeah. So for those with type 2, again, the type mm-hmm. where it's brought on due to lifestyle changes, it is as soon as possible you should go in and get that eye exam because, again, you're just – nobody's really sure how long the diabetes has been sitting there for, right?
Right.
For type 1 diabetes, typically a child is starting to get those symptoms and signs and they get diagnosed right around the time where diabetes is starting to affect the body. So, you know, sometimes there's more leniency there where within a couple years – they expect a child to go in and get an eye exam. But there's never, it's, you know, sooner is better than never, right?
Right.
So as soon as you can, I think it's smart to go in and get that dilated eye exam.
We were talking about how it's more prevalent nowadays that kids or, you know, young people under the age of 20, 21 and 18 are getting diabetes. Mm-hmm. What if you're pregnant and, you're having vision problems with type 1 and type 2 diabetes. What kind of impact does it have on a pregnancy?
Yeah, for individuals who are pregnant, they're just a lot more susceptible to high blood sugar in mm-hmm. the body. So if someone already has type 1 or type 2 diabetes, you have to be extra cautious when you enter the stages of pregnancy. And your doctor, you know, your OBGYN will be very will be wanting to do regular blood tests and whatnot. But for any woman who's pregnant, regardless of if they have diabetes or not, you know, they're already staying on top of their blood tests. And there's a very specific blood test or I should say a diabetes test that's done, which is testing for the impact of high blood sugar on a pregnant woman. And it's a test where they have to go in and drink this horrible, very sweet orange fluid, and then they get tested for it after they do a blood test after that to kind of check their levels. And every woman goes through that. But it's just bringing awareness to the fact that, you know, a pregnant woman is more susceptible to those changes. And there's diabetes related pregnancy issues that can come from that.
We're talking with Dr. Pramila Banwaith. She's the Vice President of Clinical Programs, United Healthcare Vision. And she's talking about diabetes, especially diabetes affecting our younger population. Dr. Pramila Benwith, you sound so young. I'm not going to ask your age, but you're a doctor, so I know you're older than 21. My question for you is, what drew you to this particular form of medicine?
Yeah, when I was a child, I definitely always wanted to get into the healthcare field and help others. You know, I think that's a very common answer for those who are in this field. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think, you know, I was led to the eyes through, right. In college, I shadowed a pediatric eye doctor, and I absolutely loved everything he was doing and helping young children, you know, in whatever form it may be. There's vision therapy where it's helping children be able to use their eyes better if they have vision-related issues in school. Obviously needing glasses, contact lenses, but then there was the side of children who had other systemic related issues that affected the eyes, such mm-hmm. as diabetes. And so there's just a lot there that a doctor and an individual can do to make impact for those children. And it was something I was drawn to.
I'm very impressed with that because I'm always curious about, you know, the different guests we have on, their backgrounds and what led them to their careers, because obviously you enjoy what you do and you help change lives and you're a very empathetic person. So I was wondering seriously, you know, how you decided that eyes and vision and then again, the impact upon the eyes is with diabetes. So when you were a small kid, you never thought, oh, I think I want to be a doctor or I want to be, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out when all of a sudden vision became the big thing for you.
Yeah, no, I always definitely wanted to be a doctor from mm-hmm. a young age. And I think the eyes was something that kind of was
drew
exposed
to
me when in college. Yeah. So it wasn't something that not many people initially think about. Like I didn't have a personal story with my vision or something
right.
that led me to that, you know, and some folks do. But for me, it just came from experiencing doctors in that field and just, you know, being very drawn to it and wanting to work with children as well.
Is diabetes the greatest disease that for younger people to deal with when it comes to vision? I mean, I'm trying to figure if there's any other disease or something that they need to be careful about other than diabetes?
Yeah. No, that's a really great question. And there are some other very common prevalent issues happening with the eyes today, more so than before, that eye doctors and parents and everyone need to just be kind of wary of. And I would say probably the biggest thing that is top of mind, raising a lot of awareness in this area, is something called nearsightedness. And, you know, nearsightedness is something that's been around for forever. You know, a lot of folks have nearsightedness, and that's when distance vision is more blurry than near, and you typically get glasses for it. But another trend we're seeing is that children at younger ages are developing nearsightedness much younger.
Does that have to do with tablets and computers and desktops and laptops?
Yes, that definitely has a huge component to it. So, again, it's lifestyle related, right? Habits and mm-hmm. things like that contribute to the progression of nearsightedness. But we're seeing it a lot at younger ages and it progressing a lot faster. And, you know, there's risks with individuals having higher amounts of nearsightedness in later ages, you know, damage to the back of the eye and whatnot. So I think it's just a big thing for parents to be to stay on top of, to make sure their children go in to get those eye exams, especially if that runs in the family, because there's a huge genetic component to that as well. So something else, you know, that I think parents should just keep an eye on, their child's vision overall, making sure they're seeing well and performing well in their activities and at school. Just getting in for an eye exam when they can is important.
I'm standing here just grinning, looking guilty because I don't wear glasses. But why do I have my on my computer screen and my phone screen, my text screen, it's more than 100. It's like 125. So I can see the letters real good, the words. Are you laughing at me?
Nobody's laughing.
Well, my kids laugh at me and some of my coworkers. They say, why don't you get some readers? I'm like, I don't wear readers.
I'm right there with you. No, I get it. It kind of sneaks up on you, and it's hard to kind of move over to the side of starting to wear glasses.
I have to use some logic, maybe get some eye surgery or something. But at the same time, I'm guilty. I'm looking too much FaceTime on the screens and stuff like that. So with back to the kids, you know, I mentioned the story about my father, getting diabetes, when he was like in his late 30s, like 36, 37 years old, and he's in his 80s now, and he's completely healthy. I mean, he's completely healthy. Can you talk about how long people can live with diabetes? Because he is, you know, he's a living example. I mean, it's not like he all of a sudden had a shorter life because he did take care of himself. Are you there?
I'm there. Say that last part again. You kind of cut out.
Yeah, I was saying that he's an example that you can live a long life. He's in his 80s now. He just took care of himself. Can you talk about how long and a healthy life that people can have, especially if they're kids and they're diagnosed with diabetes?
Yes, definitely. So anyone who is diagnosed with diabetes has the means to manage it very well, you know, and it really takes a great care team, you know, so getting involved with a pediatrician, primary care physician, dietitian, endocrinologist, anyone who would be involved in the care of that. But, you know, a child, an adult can definitely manage their diabetes to the point where they don't need to be on medication.
Right.
It may always be an underlying thing they have to deal with and just be more sensitive about, because it's not something that gets completely cured or goes away.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as they have a good care team and they're taking the steps they need to manage their lifestyle better, eat, make healthier decisions for their diet, be more active, then there's a lot of individuals out there who can lead a long and healthy lifestyle.
Totally agree. And nowadays, I notice these things because, like I said, my dad got diabetes when I was like, you know, middle school. And I was like, oh my goodness. So I was always aware of what he eats. And now the choices, it's not like, see, back then he was limited to like bland food, or because they weren't, you know, this was decades ago. So he just didn't have that many choices. And he was always eating healthy and fruits and stuff like that. But it was like, there's things that, you know, he missed donuts. He missed, you know, pies and cakes and things. Now they've got all kinds of stuff that are not, without sugar, or without pure sugar or cane sugar, or things that can upset your insulin.
That's right. Yeah, there's a lot of food choices out there, and it's, you know, sometimes overwhelming for parents and others, you know, when it comes to kind of shopping for the right foods for their family and their children. So it's important to get educated on all of that. And, you know, there's a lot of great resources, especially, you know, checking in with a pediatrician and primary care physician on a lot of it. They can refer you to some great resources on how to just, you know, better manage. There's some great apps out there. I don't have any that I can name off right now, but, mm-hmm. you know, things that can help parents make better decisions for their family.
I always tell people in this day and age, Google is your friend and so is YouTube. And you type up those words, you can have access to all kinds of information that can help you out. I'm also loving the fact that United Healthcare Vision and Prevent Blindness, you guys have launched an initiative to address the growing health concern among our young people. Was it the Eye Health Education and Systems of Care for Young Persons and Diabetes? Can you tell us a little bit about that? I think it's going to expand all the way through next year.
Yes. So we're working with a really great partner. They're called Prevent Blindness, and mm-hmm. they're the nation's leading volunteer eye health and safety organization dedicated to fighting blindness and saving sight. But we are working with them on a couple different initiatives related to diabetes and diabetes in youth. One is just creating more educational awareness out there. Especially for families and for individuals who are younger. And then also we have some pilots that we're working with in various markets that just are kind of addressing the need for more resources around in this area.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. Again, awareness. And you could, it's easy to say, it's easy to say awareness, but when you just say people just need to be aware that that situation is occurring. And sometimes that can actually save lives or initiate change. And so, again, the iHealth Education and Systems of Care for Young Persons with Diabetes, this initiative is going to span through this year all the way through 2026. And it's a long-term commitment to improving healthy outcomes for all the vulnerable populations, as well as all of the kids. We want the kids to stay healthy and prevent vision loss, and enhancing early detection systems locally all over the country, and especially here in North Texas. So once again, in summation, is there anything that we missed that you think we need to make sure everybody's aware of, Dr. Brandt?
Yes, I would just say again, most important thing is please, you know, get yourself in for an eye exam for yourself, your children, your family, regardless of if there is risk for diabetes or not. It's always good to ensure that the eye health is good. And that's sometimes something that, you know, a lot of folks miss out on when they're concerned about, you know, their overall health. So just highlighting that an eye exam is really important to have. And then if anyone wants to learn more, please visit our Prevent Blindness partners website, and they can go to preventblindness.org/diabetes.
Why are you looking at me in both of my eyes just because you're trying to talk me into these readers? Is that what you're trying to do?
That's right. You need to get yourself to an eye doctor as well and get your eyes checked.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go ahead and do that. By the way, do you wear glasses, readers, bifocals? Have you had eye surgery? I'm just curious before I let you go.
I have not had eye surgery, but I do have a small distance prescription. It's not high, but something that I do wear when I'm driving, especially mm-hmm. at night. And I am at the age where reading glasses is becoming a thing. So I do have a couple pair that I'm starting to try to get myself get used to wearing. So even for eye doctors, it's something that we all have to grapple with.
I got to ask you one more, since I got you on the phone and you're a doctor and it's about vision. I always wear sunglasses when I drive, because if I don't, I will get a headache. Does that mean I need readers? I'm just throwing it out there.
I wouldn't correlate readers and the need. It sounds like you have more sensitivity or glare issues where you need sunglasses, but that wouldn't relate to necessarily needing reading glasses for up close reading. I think that just might be, more of a sensitivity issue.
Well, Dr. Bandwidth, I appreciate you giving me that advice, and I want to thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
And thank you all for joining us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.